It's Wednesday, October 1st, 2014, and you're listening to episode 354 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 17 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan, and I am here doing a solo episode, though not for the same reason as on the previous weeks. I actually did record an episode last night with Chad, Wayne, and Pat, but it was kind of our take on it after recording it. The episode was so bad that we didn't want to air it. And so I decided, well, I can either leave the feed cold for a week or do a solo episode here on Wednesday. And I decided just to go ahead and do a solo episode. And for anyone who's curious, when I say the episode was bad, I don't mean like salacious bad, fun bad, you know, like a forbidden episode. No, I mean this thing. It was honestly, it's just crap and not worth listening to. I don't know if anyone really wants it. I can make it available, but it's not good. Okay, so let's get past that. Just one announcement, which is tomorrow night, so Thursday night, 7 p.m. Central, Chad and I will be doing our Rome 2 game. We have started over now that they've released the Empire edition of Rome, which changes the game quite significantly. He is playing Rome once again, and I am now playing the Roxolani, which is a steppes faction, nomadic faction. And before I get into my gaming topic, I have promised in all the solo episodes I have something to say either to or about British people. I want to talk specifically to our British listeners, and I want to explain to you the real differences between America and England, because I was only able to come up with three things that matter. First of all, we don't put the U in armor or the R in idea. Secondly, we have managed to take your traditional breakfast and make it even more unhealthy and yet also more awesome. If there's one meal that I feel America does better than any country or culture on the face of the earth, it would be breakfast. Now, if I had to pick a course, I'd say dessert. The third thing is that America did not understand what FIFA was until you sent John Oliver over here to explain it to us. In watching his explanation of FIFA, and I'll link this in the show notes for any other Americans who have not yet been educated, what I learned about FIFA is it's an extranational organization that is territorially decentralized and is making life really difficult for foreign allies. And what I don't understand as an American, as little as we care about soccer, especially in the 3 years between the World Cups, there's one thing we could be doing to add to the world's pastime that we're really good at. Okay, we have a track record of doing this. We've got practice here. And that is looking at these exact sorts of organizations like FIFA that have no direct national ties or creating problems for allies and bombing the shit out of them. And I feel really sorry that we're not doing that, because I think what's going to happen is 20 years from now, FIFA is going to do something really bad to America. I mean, maybe at that point we'll care about soccer or something. And we're going to be having these hearings where Congress is going to be, you know, look, 20 years ago, we knew where they were and we didn't do anything about it. And now we have chaos in the streets and we have no one but ourselves to blame for it. Because 20 years ago, when we knew where these guys were before they had run off to some mountainous region of France, we could have done something about it and didn't. And so, England, I am very, very sorry that our military is not being put to a proper use right now. Now, changing gears here, I got an email from a group doing a podcast called the Gameable Disney Podcast, which is about adapting Disney intellectual properties into role-playing games. And they asked me a question, which was a very fair question, which is they said, if I could role-play any Disney character in a role-playing game, what character would it be? Now, of course, role-playing to a certain degree is about projecting yourself into the role, right? So my first instinctive reflexive response is Prince Eric, simply so I can hit Ariel. But that's really not, I'm going to guess, the direction they were going with their question. So I have decided instead, now I realize that Disney, especially with their acquisition of Pixar and their acquisition of Marvel and now their acquisition of Star Wars, there's obviously a whole lot of stuff here we could get into. But I'm assuming that's not what they're talking about. They're talking about more of the traditional cartoon and live action Disney movies, you know, Sword in the Stone, Aristocats, Cinderella, you know, things like this. And I have chosen David Freeman from Flight of the Navigator, and this is going to tie into my role-playing subject for today. And the reason that I chose him is because of the fact that here is a human boy who has the ability to skip 20 years in the future and just ditch a whole bunch of, you know, bullshit and really kind of get past all the bad choices he would have made. Technology's going to be in a cooler place, you know, all that kind of stuff. But more than that, he had the singular opportunity to destroy an alien artificial intelligence and exterminate the alien life it was carrying, and he let that opportunity slide. And if I had a chance to step into David Freeman's shoes, I would not make the same mistake. The villains would not win at the end of that movie. I would have seen to it that they would have been killed within the first 5 minutes of my contact with them. I would have set that right. Okay, it's like the horror story where somebody, you know, actually is smart and turns on the lights and picks up a gun right at the start of the movie, and the rest of the movie is just kind of boring because everybody's sitting around because everything's cool because the bad guy's dead, okay? And it's that kind of thing. But see, this got me thinking about something. And what it got me thinking about is the nature of a character in a role-playing game. Because you see, what a character is, so way back in our run of Fear the Boot, we talked about one of the problems with a lot of characters being the fact that they seem contextless. It's like they just sprung up from the earth and they're suddenly there with their gear and ready to adventure, and they don't have much of a backstory. If they have a backstory, it's really inconsequential or incogent. And I think in many cases, at least at the time where I was at my gaming then, I was dealing with a lot of people who simply didn't put backstory in there at all. That's not really a good way, in my mind, to roleplay a character. Because in the old nature versus nurture debate, I mean, I'm of what I assume is the majority opinion, which is that it's both. But I believe that nurture, I think, is probably a little bit bigger than nature. You know, who I am, the views I hold, the fact that I'm doing this podcast, you can trace all these things back to prior events in my life, to my backstory, the skills that I have. If tomorrow something actually occurred in the world, a nuclear war, zombie apocalypse, whatever, something that we would consider story worthy for a role-playing game, which I guess is kind of sad, these are all horrible things, but whatever, it's what role-playing games are about, is people doing horrible things and surviving horrible things. Anyway, but everything that I would do in those situations is the culmination of who I was up to that point. Now, I'm not suggesting you do the novelization backstory. So, GM, I hate that. But I think you can still make a significant story in a short amount of space. Now, let's do this thought exercise looking at Disney characters. Because, you see, what I did in semi-facetious fashion was I took the story of Flight of the Navigator and I took who David Freeman was and the opportunities he has, and I use them as a jumping off point to tell my own story. Well, let's take this with any intellectual property. Let's say you're playing Star Wars, which is now a Disney property as well. And let's say you want to play Han Solo. Well, I think a lot of people wouldn't want to do that. Or if you wanted to do that, there's probably a lot of people at your table that wouldn't want you to do that. In addition to the likelihood that this character would be given a pretty fantastic power level in terms of his skills and things like that, I think it would also be human nature by default to want to play that character exactly as the character is portrayed in the movie. And I don't think you have to do that. Because you see, if you look at a character I invented, and let's say I did it well, at least in my opinion, then what I've done is I have written a backstory up to a certain point. I have explained who this person is up to a certain moment in time, why he or she is who he or she is, why he or she has certain skills and attributes and traits and phobias and loves and aspirations and all that kind of stuff. And then there's a jumping off point where we are going to tell a story moving forward, where this character is going to evolve and this character is going to be challenged by the things that they encounter. And I don't just mean challenged in terms of life or death, but I mean challenged in terms of beliefs and ideas and possibly learning new skills and being exposed to new experiences. And so who this person is going to evolve from that point. And if someone came to me and said, I want to play a character, and it's not, look, we're not even going to have any pretense. It's not like if I read between the lines, this character is shamelessly based on an existing character. You're just going to tell me this character is an existing character. I am just going to play Simba from The Lion King. Okay, I don't know, whatever. I would be okay with that if I felt like the person was treating it like a proper role-playing game character. That what they're doing is they're using whatever canon exists for that character up to that point in their life. And then from that point forward, playing the character as their own and letting that character evolve in a way that makes sense by the way that you interpret that character and by the experiences this character's having, by the ongoing nurture we look at that nature versus nurture thing, the nurture this character is being exposed to. And I think one of the concerns that I would have is if somebody decides to play Han Solo, either they're going to play Han Solo exactly as he is in the movies, all the way from start to finish, plus, who knows, expanded universe, episode 7, I don't know, whatever they decide to go with. Or that someone at the table would be like, well, Han Solo wouldn't do that, and high-pitched geek voice and stupid argument ensues. And I think there certainly is an argument to be made for any character about remaining relatively consistent to the backstory. But isn't the point of role-playing ultimately for someone to take an idea, to internalize it, to make it their own, and to explore that character as you think that person would play out in the experiences that they're having? Now, I mean, certainly you can say, well, that person ought to stay true to who they were. But for example, if we look at Flight of the Navigator, which I brought up earlier, there's nothing in all seriousness in David Freeman's character that would lend me to think that he is a genocidal xenophobe. And so he probably would not do the things that I would do if I was in that situation. But that doesn't mean I can't have some freedom to experiment with that character. And I think it's true in the character you write for yourself. I mean, if I write a character and say this character grew up in a certain environment and had certain experiences, and all of a sudden I'm playing something wildly different, I think it is fair of the other players to say, wait a minute, what exactly is it you're playing here? Let me stress, there's got to be balance here. There's nothing more irritating than having the GM or other players constantly policing how you play your character and telling you what you would or wouldn't do. I am not suggesting that that is BS. But what I am saying is I think if you set out to roleplay a concept, you are constraining yourself. Okay, you have already set up yourself to say, I'm at least going to be within this ballpark. Now, I may not be exactly where you think I should be, and that's fine, because it's my interpretation, it's my exploration of the character. And I think there are some individuals who would say, well, because I have experienced this character as interpreted by someone other than you, for example, with Han Solo, you have the interpretive work of Harrison Ford, who played the character, you have the script writers, the directors, George Lucas, who got thrown off the set of Empire Strikes Back, we'll let that fact stand on its own. But you have all these influences that have shaped what we now have as theoretically a common understanding, or at least what we think is a common understanding. But in truth, look at all the nerd wanks going on the internet. I mean, we can't agree on that type of stuff. We have all kinds of wanks about what this or that character would do in a certain situation. Why? Because we all have our interpretations of that character. And so I think it's somewhat incumbent upon the group that just as you would with a self-written character, if somebody says, once again, this is not based on so-and-so, this is so-and-so, to give them some freedom to experiment that character as long as the player is at least making some half-assed attempt to stay faithful to the idea. And I think part of the reason that I'm willing to advocate this, despite the fact there's a lot of ways it can go wrong, is because I think this is ultimately true of any character. Now, there may be some value in not naming it. There may be some value in not saying that a rose is a rose. You know, there's social power in language. I get that. But if I play somebody who's a paranoid shut-in, well, what do I really have to base that on except my own understanding of paranoid shut-in individuals or experiences that I've had with people that fit that? Now, I may even have someone specific in mind. There may be a specific individual that I've had contact with or saw a news story on or something that's shaping this. And so ultimately, I am taking these characters, and where do they come from? Well, they come from my own nurture. They may be interpreted by my nature and nurture, but they come from my nurture. They come from the things that I've been exposed to in my life. All that I'm suggesting is that to go ahead and name it for what it is, if the people at the table can handle it and won't turn it into a pointless wank or a power trip or whatever it can be, and believe me, once again, I totally accept it can go wrong, then I'm not sure that I personally see a huge leap. Once again, I'll accept there's a leap, but I'm not sure I see a huge leap between that and any character you would self-write anyway, because your creativity is ultimately confined by the fishbowl of your own eyes. Now, what you might be doing that's different is you might be cherry-picking things. You might say, well, it's not based on one individual. I'm taking this from this individual, this from this individual, this from this individual. And in truth, as you're doing this, you may not subconsciously even recognize you're doing it. You may be making what you think is a completely new character, but what you're actually doing on a subconscious level is digging up experiences and ideas and stereotypes and archetypes and whatever that you have squirreled away in your brain, and creating what seems to be a new creation. And that's cool, too. That's great. That's wonderful. And certainly that does save you from the power fantasies and the character wanks. And it does encourage you to try combinations that no one else has done to, you know, maybe even avoid some ruts and such. But all I'm saying is that I think that you can still play an established character and do it well, provided both you and the people at the table are willing to accept that all you're doing is using that character's canon as a backstory to who that character will be within the game. And maybe that's not going to work in a lot of groups, but it's something that I'd actually be interested to try. I think there's very few characters I'd be willing to play, but I think it is something I'd be willing to do. In Battletech in particular, I can probably come up with a half a dozen characters that I'd find interesting enough to play. In D&D, there might be some I'd accept, but right now somebody wanted one from one of these power fantasy books, you know, like a, not bagging on them, but like a Bob Salvatore, Ed Greenwood type book. I'm sorry, I'm just allowing that character because, yeah, that character's not there for depth. I love you guys, but it's not. So anyway, thank you guys for tuning in. Have a great week and great games. And hopefully I'll have folks back for an episode next week. And we won't have a series of disastrous experiences right before the episode that taint the quality of our performance on the recording. So thank you for tuning in, and I will talk to you then. This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2014. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.